From Tridio Media, I'm Father Roderick, and I'm that Star Wars priest. Hey, and welcome back to my weekly show, That's Star Wars Priest, and that would be me, Father Roderick. And I'm still waiting for my Blu-ray of The Last Jedi. I don't know why they first sell the digital version. So if you have, you can buy the movie on iTunes and on Amazon in a digital format, but I like to have the Blu-ray because of the increased resolution and the extras. And I know there are nowadays also extras with the streaming version, but the Blu-ray is definitely what I want to have. And then and I think it's coming out a little bit later, probably also to be able to double dip. That's a classic Lucasfilm technique that even though it's now Disney, they are happy to continue. But I don't double dip. I'm just going to wait for the Blu-ray. And then what I want to do is to go almost frame by frame through the movie and record on this show my commentary and my analysis of The Last Jedi. I wanted to do that when the movie was in theaters, but there were two reasons that it was very hard. It's a long movie, and in the dark, I cannot take notes. And I wanted to make sure that there were so many things that I wanted to share about The Last Jedi that I figured I need to have the movie at home so I can pause it and stop it and analyze it. So that is why I didn't do it. And I was also very busy during that time of the year. Now I have a little bit more time, so I still want to fulfill my promise that I would do an in-depth analysis, not just what did I like, what didn't I like, but also what are the layers in the story that I've discovered. So this week, we'll still have to wait a little bit. So what are we going to talk about? I want to talk about all the cool Star Wars news. These times are so amazing to be a Star Wars fan because there is something happening almost on a daily basis. First of all, of course, the launch of The Last Jedi. And there is one extra that I'm envious of as a future Blu-ray buyer, and that the current digital buyers of The Last Jedi can already enjoy, and that is a soundtrack-only version of The Last Jedi. The news broke last week that this upcoming Star Wars movie, so Star Wars 9, the yet unnamed sequel to The Last Jedi, will be probably the last movie scored by John Williams. And I can understand the man has the right to retire. And writing the score for a movie is incredibly demanding. And even though, of course, he's not the only person to score the movie, I mean, he's the lead composer, but there are many people working for him to kind of, you know, fill all the different aspects of the orchestra, etc. Nevertheless, it puts a lot of pressure on someone, I think, who deserves his rest. Plus, isn't Star Wars isn't it now the time to pass it on to a new generation? That was the core message of The Last Jedi, is, you know, what is old, but now it's time for a new generation, for a new future for Star Wars. And I think musically, this is also the right moment to pass it on. There is no way in the world that John Williams could continue to score all these TV shows, live action TV shows that are promised now, all these in-between movies, the new trilogy by Rian Johnson, the new movies by the writers of Game of Thrones. It's time for new composers. And let's be honest, there is, I think, a great benefit. Some fans are upset. Like, please, John Williams, Star Wars is not Star Wars without you. And I don't agree. I think it is possible to continue to speak the musical language that John Williams established for Star Wars, but also to let it evolve. If there's one message in Star Wars, especially in these newer films, is don't be afraid. Like, fear leads to the dark side. And that's also true when it comes to music. Fear that Star Wars won't be Star Wars without John Williams is the wrong attitude. And there are actually already a number of composers that have shown that they can evoke the musical language of John Williams with and add to it at the same time. Think of Giacchino, who was hired at the last moment to write the score for Rogue One. He replaced an already working composer that – I forgot his name. At the last moment, they decided to go with Giacchino. And he only had like a month to write the entire score. And, well, it's not one of his best scores, but it is definitely Star Wars. And it sounds like Star Wars. And yet there are some elements in there that are very much like Giacchino. A lot of that – a lot of the existing Star Wars composers, also the ones that compose music for games, some other the animated series, often pay tribute to John Williams. And they will probably continue to do that. But what I hope is that we'll get composers that also introduce new themes. One of the things that I miss a little bit in these later scores by John Williams is what I think made his composing style for Star Wars so unique in the original trilogy, and that was that he almost approached it as space opera from a musical point of view. Every character would have a theme, the theme of Princess Leia, the theme, the Imperial March. You know, you hear that and you see Star Destroyers. And in his scores for The Last Jedi and also for The Force Awakens, there are a few of these themes. There's Rey's theme, but other characters like Kylo Ren, he has a theme, but it is slightly less hummable in a certain way. It's less recognizable. And he starts – what I appreciate is that in The Last Jedi, he definitely started to evolve some of those, kind of strengthen some of these character themes. But there is also a lot of music that is, dare I say it, almost a bit filler music. I mean, it's great music, but it is not very recognizable, and it is – it's kind of middle-of-the-road stuff for John Williams. So I hope that with new composers, we'll also get new themes, new talents, and perhaps some of them may stick and become just as iconic as John Williams, and perhaps others are just there to score one movie or one TV show and will be forgotten afterwards. But there are a ton of great, great composers out there nowadays. And I think that John Williams by himself has revalued music, the importance of music in our experience of the movie and of movies. Back then in 78, when Star Wars came out, in those years, a lot of the newer – especially the newer movies that were science fiction based used electronic music. And – no one wants to listen to that music anymore. It's so dated. And so the only exception is probably Blade Runner, which had Vangelis, synthesizer music. But that was so atmospheric and so out of this world that it still holds up very well. And I loved how the new Blade Runner movie kind of paid tribute to the Vangelis style of synthesizer music. But most of these other movies, think of The Last Starfighter and you can't listen to some of those soundtracks anymore. John Williams did something by introducing orchestral music, which was not necessarily going to be the case. I mean, George Lucas had many other options, and perhaps the studios at the time would have wished that he would have gone for, I don't know, rock music or pop music. But George Lucas was, I think, very well aware that he was creating a timeless mythology. And that Star Wars, the music, the soundtrack, had also to be timeless in a certain way, because all is relative. John Williams for A New Hope used a lot of themes that came from like more modern classical composers. Dvorak and even some Beethoven stuff and Shostakovich. There are a lot of themes in Star Wars. The planets, listen to that and you'll hear Star Wars. So John Williams too used existing musical language to write the score for Star Wars. That's why it's both new and familiar. And I think that is the way to go. It's like music is like a language. You know, it will, whether you want it or not, it will always evolve. And if it doesn't evolve, it's no longer music. It's like you have the grammar Nazis, you know, the imperial guards of our spelling and vocabulary. And we create this artificial approach of languages, as if languages are should be stuck in time and, oh, you cannot make any mistakes. Well, you know what? The language that we currently speak exists because of mistakes, because of people not abiding by the rules. But language is part – that we are using languages, it's a rebel movement. You know, the empire would try to fix languages. That's probably why the empire is always speaking in the British, kind of almost ancient, very old fixed style. The way that Tolkien speaks is like you're listening to a Shakespeare actor, you know. But the rebels the rebellion is made up out of very different people from different cultures, different languages, different backgrounds. And so they kind of symbolize the evolution. The empire is what is static. They want to hold on. They fear change. Rebels want change. That's what creates hope. And I think in terms of musical language or language as such, if you want a future, you will need to change. You will need to evolve. You will need to be ready to let go of your fear. Wow, I didn't think this would turn into a linguistic discussion. Why did I bring that up? Well, I don't know. It's just going to be the last movie probably with John Williams, and I don't think it's a bad thing. I think this could be really good for the future of the musical language of Star Wars. Now that the digital versions of The Last Jedi are coming out, we also get finally access to the long rumored deleted scenes in The Last Jedi. And there were many. The first cut of the movie was more than 3 hours. It was unwatchable because it was so long. And even now, I would argue that The Last Jedi is too long. I loved every single minute, but it was too long. They should have taken out more stuff, be more disciplined. I think that you could have told the same story in the time span, kind of the traditional time span of a Star Wars movie. And I think that J.J. Abrams will actually do that. He will. I would not be surprised if the ninth movie will be shorter than The Last Jedi. However, we already have a lot of deleted scenes. And the question of always is, you know, should that have been part of the movie or not? Why was it cut out? And I assume that these deleted scenes come with director's commentary. From what I've heard, and I still have to watch it for myself, there's a lot of good stuff that was cut out, but also a lot of bad stuff and stuff that didn't work. There is one major scene that I felt was cut out, probably for the right reasons, because it made the movie longer. It didn't really contribute to the narrative, but it should have been fixed. And that is this. I think this is truly unforgivable, is this mention by Luke Skywalker that he would train Rey and that there would be three lessons. And I've watched this movie 5 times at the movies, and every time it's like, I count one, I count two. Where is lesson number three? Why would you have your main character say that he would give 3 lessons and he only gives 2? That doesn't make sense. That is lousy writing. Well, it turns out there was actually a third lesson, and it was a major, major scene where Rey had to learn that rushing to help others is not necessarily the right thing to do, and sometimes it is, and blah, blah, blah. It was like there was supposed to be an attack on the village, and it turned out to be something completely different. And that entire scene was long. It was cut out. But they didn't change the setup. And having Luke Skywalker say, I'm going to give you 3 lessons and only delivering 2, I find that still the most irritating mistake in The Last Jedi. And yeah, some people would say, if that's the only thing that bothered you, then wow, you have to rewatch the movie. But honestly, I think there's a lot in The Last Jedi that was misunderstood. With time and rewatching the movie, I think you'll get to appreciate the movie more. And definitely with all the abundant commentary of Rian Johnson, you start to understand why he told the story the way he did. You still may not like it, and you may have thought of other options, but at least there is a rhyme and a reason to the way he shot The Last Jedi. But this is kind of a part of a this is a mistake, an error that could have been fixed. And they did actually reshoot some other stuff. For instance, one of the other deleted scenes has a different ending for Captain Phasma. I think does more justice to both the character of John Boyega, Finn, and Phasma. But also for time and pace reasons, it was cut out. But then they redid the ending, and now Phasma is killed in a different way. That is, I think, the proper way to deal with deleted scenes. But please don't tell me I'm going to give you three lessons, and then Luke evaporates before he can give the third lesson. It's like, duh, that third lesson, we will never hear it. Oh, well. What else was new? Let me go through the list. Unfortunately, there are no Star Wars references in Ready Player One, which is, as far as I've heard from the initial reviews, going to be an amazing movie. If you've not read the book, go read it. It is so cool. But Ready Player One, the story is riddled with references to the 70s and the 80s. However, Steven Spielberg could not get the rights to the Star Wars franchise. And what an omission. A movie a story that so depends on nostalgia and it goes back to the 80s. How can it not have Star Wars? And so, copyright. That's one of the things I hope we don't have in heaven, because it's really bothersome. It would have been so cool. Fortunately, apparently there's enough to enjoy in Ready Player One without Star Wars, but it would have been perfect with Star Wars added to the mix. Oh, well. What else was there? See, there's something happening with the Star Wars Battlefront. It's that very controversial game with the loot boxes, and they're still making adjustments. I have to admit, even though I love playing games, I love Star Wars, the game looks amazing. I've not bought it because I refuse to buy that game because of the microtransactions and because of the way that EA is approaching this franchise. And I truly hope that this was the last game that they will have in their portfolio, and that Lucasfilm will choose another game developer to do Star Wars in the future. What else? I'm almost done. Oh, yeah, Solo. That was interesting. Of course, Solo is getting closer and closer. May. It's going to be yet another Star Wars movie. Unbelievable. There was a lot of brouhaha surrounding these awesome, cool retro posters for the Solo movie. But it appears that they outsourced the design of the posters to an artist who stole the idea with the letters, you know, being the cutouts for the characters. Stole that from a French series of jazz covers or something like that. And if you see the original that supposedly inspired these Star Wars posters, you're like, oh yeah, yeah, oh, there's no doubt about it. That artist completely just ripped off those French album covers. And that's very embarrassing for Lucasfilm and for Disney that they didn't know that. And stupid of that artist. I mean, he will probably get sued for this. But anyway, they brought us new posters featuring the same art, but this time without the cool, you know, the cutout letters. But it still looks very cool, I think. And you know what? It kind of looks a bit like Charlie's Angels and stuff like that. So I think that the posters are hinting at something that a lot of fans are underestimating, I think. They think of Solo as a classic traditional Star Wars movie. And I think they will be surprised at how much of a comedy this will actually turn out to be. Everything tells me that this movie will surprise us, both by how much fun it is and how good it is. And I am definitely an optimist here, where a lot of people are naysayers and they think this movie is doomed and I've got a bad feeling about this. Well, I've got a good feeling about this movie, and I will enjoy it. regardless if it merits to be enjoyed or not. No, it's going to be good. It's Star Wars. And that wraps up my short episode about the recent Star Wars news. Of course, there will be much more to talk about very soon. Can't wait to get my Blu-ray. I want to know one last thing of you. Have you already rewatched The Last Jedi? And how is your assessment now? Were you one of those people that didn't like it the first time? And is it getting better over time for you? Or what is your biggest problem that you have with the movie? And what is the thing you like most about The Last Jedi? Let me know in the comments if you're watching this on YouTube. Please subscribe by hitting that subscribe button. And if you want to check out my other shows, recorded an episode of The Daily Breakfast about learning Klingon, you may want to check... Well, perhaps I shouldn't pitch that to a Star Wars audience. But anyway, I also talk about Ewokese in that episode. Check out The Daily Breakfast over at Tridio.com. If you like what you hear or see and you want to help me make more of these programs, consider becoming a patron over at patreon.com/FatherRoderick. And between Easter and Pentecost, we will do our first Tridio fun drive. And one of the projects that I am going to try to find funding for is a Star Wars project. It's a number of Star Wars videos that I want to make, but I need resources to do that. I need your help. So keep that in mind between Easter and Pentecost, our first Tridio fun drive. Thanks for watching, and may the Force be with you.